hand over to Rachel C tonight, who is going to share experience, strength, and hope.
Thanks, Charlie.
My name's Rachel. I'm an addict. And I'm not great at not swearing, so I'll have a go. Microphones, that compulsion on sort of choking on my own swear words right now. It's very hot in here. Thanks for taking the meeting, Charlie, and thanks, Elliot, for your chair. And I really enjoyed it, and I've got lots of similarities to you, and it's been a pretty sad week, what with one thing and another. And I was in here yesterday, in my work capacity, and there's that sounds really echoey. Is that normal?
Yeah.
You need to be closer. It's even louder. And I was in here yesterday, and with work, and to attend a memorial service for all the homeless people that died in London during the past year. And it's in the church that that's attached to this building, and you go in and they read out all the names of those people, and there's a whole service and sort of entertainment and remembrance, and it's to remember people that have been forgotten, really. And during part of that, one of the priests who was doing part of the service was talking about us and talking about people who had lost their battle with addiction, who had fought and lost their battle with addiction. And it's very difficult to hear things like that and not feel pretty fucking grateful for where you are. And and the sort of the stark reality of it, of what we're up against. And a lot of the time I don't take life very seriously. I do mess about, and I don't often really think about where I come from either. I tick along in my day-to-day life with my friends and my family, and running around the park and playing with the dogs and going to work, and that's my normal life now. I don't have much cause to think about where I come from except when I'm in here, or when I'm faced with a work situation that reminds me of distance travelled. And yesterday was that was a big one, because there was 130 names read out in that service, and I don't know how many people are in here tonight, but I'd say that kind of that evens it out a little bit for us. And I feel very lucky to still be here. And my using, as I often say, was pretty miserable from the start. There was I had a year or so of messing about and playing up, and then after that it was almost like I gravitated towards the things that were going to do me the most harm, and it was like standing on a cliff edge waiting to jump into my addiction. The inevitability of it was overwhelming. I knew that it was only a matter of time. As soon as I encountered people taking hard drugs, it was only a matter of time before I just fell off the cliff. And when it happened, that was exactly what happened. I fell off the cliff. I fell head first into it. Seemed to be hell-bent on doing myself the most harm in the shortest time possible, and the end to that seemed fairly inevitable as well. And that's why I'm enjoying my job, and that's why it's such a stark contrast. I did live outside while I was using in very unsafe situations as well from a very young age. It was I lived in vehicles, I lived in I lived on site, I lived in squats, I lived in derelict buildings, I lived in a cardboard box under a leisure centre, I lived in a railway arch. I put myself on offer to a lot of dangerous situations, and I survived, but I didn't really get away with much, you know. And it was when I was 18, you know, like you said, Elliot, you know, I knew I was dying. It was just taking a bit too long at 18. So I had my first suicide attempt, and I got housed very quickly. And I thought that was it then. You know, I thought I had a council flat, I had a script. I won, and what I didn't realise was that I wasn't living in a cardboard box and I wasn't asking strangers for money. And the worst of my using was yet to come. I kind of sat the rest of it out, hiding, really. I had no idea how to get out of it. Absolutely no idea how to get out of it. I knew I was in a corner. I knew it was going to kill me. People around me were dropping like flies. A load of people moved into town and took over the heroin and cut it with all kinds of shit and didn't cut it enough and were killing everyone off. And I just had no vocabulary to ask for any help. And I didn't know where to turn. And I went in and out of hospital and sort of slid further down into myself and until I really thought, you know, I had a couple of suicide attempts, I really thought I just couldn't do it anymore. Dying was taking far too long and I was going to have to do something else. And it was the first time I'd tried to clean up. I'd lied about it lots of times, but I hadn't actually tried sort of not using drugs as a, you know, as a means to get clean. In fact, it hadn't actually occurred to me. A doctor suggested it to me once. What do they know? I've got a drug problem. Why don't you stop taking some drugs? And I just thought it was, you know, something. It clearly wasn't properly trained, and I needed to go to another doctor. And that was the thing. I was just mental in the head, and rational thinking just went completely over my head. I didn't get it. I didn't understand what he was talking about, and I went into a detox. Which it was at the time, it was in the early 90s, and it was, they were trying something new, because that's always good, isn't it? And at the time, what they were trying was injecting people with large amounts of naltrexone and then standing next to them with a crash trolley. And I heard that this took 7 days, so I thought that's probably the one for me. The alternative I heard was going and staying in this house down by the canal where they locked you up for 6 months and you couldn't watch the telly. Well, that's probably not for me. I'll take the crash facilities and the pepidine and the naltrexone. And we'll have this knocked out in a week. And then I'm going to be a normal person. So I set about preparing to be a normal person. I bought some breakfast cereal. And some kind of notebook to record all my wisdom during this process. And things didn't quite work out. I had the allergic reaction you're supposed to have when you're full of opiates and you take naltrexone. No shit. And I was very, very sick. And it took me a little while to realise that my detox had gone horrendously wrong, and what I was actually doing was a turkey in a psychiatric unit. I got on it after a couple of weeks, and I couldn't go home. My house was full of drugs and addicts, and I was there again, not knowing where to turn. But this time I felt like I had a bit of, you know, bit of a cause to fight, and I've been through some of this, the illness, so I could, you know, hang on to that. And that was when I saw the poster in the hospital, and I must have walked past it a thousand times while I was pacing up and down demanding Mogadon. I must have seen that poster before, but I hadn't seen it before. It was always there, but I hadn't seen it before. And and it said, drug problem, maybe we can help. And that was the NA poster. And I think those words have been very carefully chosen to not sound like they're telling you what to do. And there's no promise in that, is that maybe we can help, maybe we can't. Yeah, you've got nothing to lose, have you? So I gave them a ring, and it was an answer phone with, yes, it wasn't, we didn't have the technology then. It was an answer phone with a list of names on it, and I was quite intimidated by the names. I didn't recognise them, and they sounded like hippies to me. And so I rang the one called Paul. But that was probably safest. And Paul rang me back in the hospital. He rang me back in the hospital. Someone came and got me. Paul's on the phone. And then Paul came to see me and told me what I had to do. Said, you've got to go to meetings. You've got to stop taking drugs. That's it, really, you know. And so I tried to get, like, the secrets out of him so I could, like, you know, just, like, not do the meetings bit. And he would, like, give me the info, you know what I mean? And he was having none of it. He said, no, you know, go down there and tell me where it was, where to go. It wasn't going to be there, but he told me where to go. And I went to my first meeting. In a stripy jumper, 10 sizes too big, and a pair of sunglasses so you wouldn't know. And just, you know, sat in the room trying not to scratch my face. And it was, I was really worried that there'd be someone I knew in the meeting. And there was a dealer from the estate over the road, and I thought that was the resident kind of sign that someone would know me, it was in the meetings. And I was looking at her, I was thinking, what's wrong with her face? Like, I was looking at her, I thought, what's and it was only until after I realised she wasn't pinned. And I knew there was something wrong with her face, but I couldn't tell what it was. And she was someone I'd known, and who I'd known in a pretty bad way. Lost all her children, she had her house burnt down. It was, you know, it was full on round her gaff, and she was in a meeting with her pupils, and that was enough for me, you know, because if she could do it, and I knew her, you know, and I knew how bad she was, then maybe I could do it. Maybe I could do it. And I found it all very exciting, and I couldn't wait to go back. I loved hearing about people's using. I loved it, you know, and it does my head in now, and I hear people say, hear about the drugs. I think, oh, I do, do you know what I mean? I do, and I did, and I did want to hear about people's using. I wanted evidence that you were the same as me. I wasn't, you know, you walk in nice sort of clean clothes with jobs and cars and expensive things, and I need you to tell me where you come from so I know the same as me, and I really loved that. Loved it when someone walked in and they were really well together and they'd come out with the most horrendous story of where I'd be just, it was just Jack and Ori twice a week. I loved it. And I would go back and think, like, be just thinking, God, I hope it's them this week. I hope it's them. I pray them. And there was only 10 of us, so it didn't take long. And they kept me coming back, and their care and their compassion kept me coming back. And I was terrified of hated holding hands. I was really sweaty and clammy, and the holding hands bit used to kill me, and the hugs used to kill me, and I'd be frozen at the end. And they pretended they didn't notice, but I know they did. And they'd come over and hug me and tell me to keep coming back, and ask me where I was at and ask me what I was doing, and it worked. You know, I did what they said. I did what they said. I did the very basic things they told me to do: eating and washing and putting one foot in front of the other, turn up for life, and they were, you know, they were the basics that stood me in good stead before they could take me through the process of the steps, where I'd been, what I'd done, and be ready to share some of that stuff, like you said. And I was mortified that the idea that you should write all that down and tell it to another person, that your deepest, darkest secrets. And I did it, and it was excruciating, and I conned myself into doing it by promising myself I didn't have to read it out. And I don't think there's any deepest, darkest secrets now. I haven't shared actually in a meeting, you know. And I wrote them down thinking, my God, I can't tell another single person that. Being crippled with shame about who I was and what I'd done in my addiction. I've said it all out loud 100 times. It's got no power over me now. And I really do have that freedom. And through the amends steps as well, I can go anywhere. I can go anywhere I want in the world. And I don't have to worry about bumping into anybody. There's, you know, it doesn't mean I don't feel the fear, but I'm not afraid to. I can go anywhere. And it will be all right. I mean, there's going to be people I won't be that pleased to see occasionally, you know. That's normal. That's being human. But I'm not afraid of it, and I'm not imprisoned by who I am or what I've done. And like you said earlier as well, that the self-hatred that governed me in my early recovery, and thank God for people coming back and telling me what was out there, because I was ready to throw myself under it all the time, and had rock bottoms in recovery where I thought, I can't live with drugs, I can't live without drugs, I can't live with myself, I'm the biggest, you know, and feeling like I'm falling down that well again, like I did when I dove into my addiction, you know, into that spiral of self-hatred where I just cannot tolerate myself. And if I could take my feet off, I would kick my own head in. That, you know, that kind of feeling. And just getting through that and hearing, the thing that takes the power away from that is hearing, coming here and hearing that everyone else is as mad as me, and that they live, and that they're okay. And I look at them and I think, well, they're all right. I don't think that about them, you know. And and learn how to not think it about myself and listen to people who tell me what's out there, you know, and I think, you know, I'm not the most diligent, graceful, recovering addict you'll ever meet. I'm not the most honest, hard-working, spiritual, recovering addict you'll ever meet. If I can cut a corner, I will. If I can get away with something, I'll probably have a go. But I have, you know, I am still here, and still having a go. And it is, you know, there is distance travelled. I came here for work yesterday, and listening to the people, you know, the people who I'm working for, people who I'm working with, who are the people who I was, and the people who passed away were the people that I could have been. And there's times like that when my life feels pretty full circle, you know. I've got a job that I love, even though it sometimes sucks the life out of me. I've got the keys to the safe, the charity I work for, and I'm 100% trustworthy with money. And I know that. Give me any amount of money, I won't spend a penny of it. It's, you know, other things I'm not great at. That's one of them. That's one of my strengths that I've got in my life today, and that's what I do. That's what I do for my living. And I didn't know that's who I was going to be. You know, when I came into recovery, I didn't count my clean time days. I counted it in gyro days. My mate used to meet me on a Wednesday and escort me to the Tesco to get my shopping, and then escort me to the meeting, to where I was safe, and then I would go home, and then I would have survived another gyro day. That was a Wednesday. I'd be all right on a Thursday. You know, that's who I was when I came to NA. Now I'm the person with the safe keys who's really, really tight with the petty cash. And it's great. It's great. You know, that's not who I thought I was going to be. And I like running. That's what I like doing. Funny enough, I still like running. And in a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to be running my 10th marathon. So I'm obviously killed. I'm still living by the philosophy that if something's good, you should just do it until you can't walk. And that's all that works for me. That and being around the people I love and trust, and I've met most of them in here. I met my husband in here. Some of you were at our wedding. I did the photos, and other people were there dancing, and you know, that's something that I could have imagined, having a relationship with someone that I trust was wasn't available to me for a long time. What am I using? A long time in my recovery, and that was something I learned to do in here, and I learned who I wanted to be around in here. The people that I spend my time with today are I never go away from them wondering what they meant. I know what they meant. You know, I never have to think about it. If I do have to think about it, that's not someone I need to be around. You know, if I have to think about, what did they mean by that? All that kind of thing. They're not people that are in my life anymore. And that seems to be you know, one of the things I'm finding out about as time's passing and my life's getting shorter, that I need to, you know, choose more wisely about where I'm spending my time, my energy, and you know, and things like yesterday do kind of bring that home, really. That is, we're not here that long. I need to make the effort, because, you know, naturally, on my default setting, left to my own devices, I'm still fairly negative. I'm necessarily working in my own and others' best interests. And it becomes, you know, just about me and what I'm not getting. And when I'm thinking about, you know, where we've been and what we're doing, and listening to how other people live life, it's the opposite, you know, it's the exact opposite of my natural default setting still. And it really only doesn't take that much effort for me to sort of to step out of that. I haven't really got much more to say. If you're new to NA, please keep coming back, because you really don't know what is going to happen. And that's not a threat. You really don't know what's going to happen. You know, you turn right one day and meet that person, and then this happens, and then you end up here, and then, you know, that's how it goes. That's life, and that's a choice. That's a choice I keep making. I was talking to my friend this morning. We got clean together, and she went out for a long time, and is suffering some pretty dark consequences as a result of that. But she's back. And we were talking about the opportunity that crisis affords you to step through the door. And it's there for a really limited period of time. And anything can cause it. You know, my dog's run away. Someone's nicked my boots. I've lost my last fiver. I've bought some bad gear. Whatever it is, that thing, that last straw, that final... Right, that is it. You know, that whatever that crisis is, yeah, on that day that affords us that opportunity to step through the door. Mm-hmm. And my responsibility is to protect that, because I can go back at any time I like, but I don't know when that opportunity is coming around again. I don't know. That's not my choice then. So if I've made that choice, that's it. All the other choices there in front of me. I can choose where I go, I can choose who I'm with, I can choose what I do with my time. But that one choice, and that's it. That's all my choices are over. I never made a choice for myself when I was using. I just ended up careering from one disaster to another. There was no choice in it. So that's... If you are new around, and if you're wondering what everyone's going on about, and if you feel rough, and you're wondering if this is for you, just give it a bit of time and see what happens. You know, you don't have to stay. Just stay for a bit and see what happens, and hopefully you'll get what you're looking for. Thanks.
Thank you.